Welcome to Weekend Ag Matters from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. Join us for an in-depth look at Iowa agriculture. Here are your hosts, Anna Hastert and Dustin Hoffman.
Happy New Year and welcome back for another episode of Weekend Ag Matters. Anna Hastert, your host here this week, joined by Dustin Hoffman. Dustin, how was your holiday break?
You know, it was pretty good. We were out of the office most of the time here over the past couple weeks, spending time with family and everybody for the holidays, Christmas and New Year's. And, you know, in this time of year, it's usually pretty quiet for us anyway because not a lot goes on. You know, Congress is on their holiday break, and there's just not a whole lot of things happening. The markets are on usually slower trades with the holiday breaks when they're interrupted like that. But still, it was not a shortage of things to talk about over these last 2 weeks.
Yeah, and Dustin, something that maybe some of our listeners don't know about quite yet that was announced here this week is that Ken Root, who has been with the network since its founding, is retiring. He is retired as of Friday of this week. So we wish Ken well in his retirement. I think he plans on traveling a little bit more with his wife, Jane, as well as visiting family and friends across the country. So we wish the best for Ken. It's been a pleasure having him at the network here. We're very thankful for him starting the network. Without the network, Dustin and I would not be employed. Well, we'd probably be employed, but just not here.
Yeah, that's probably true. I'd probably still be in Minnesota.
But it still provided us a great opportunity to get into this space, to develop in our careers. And Ken has provided useful insight throughout his time here. So we want to thank Ken as well as wish him well.
And you will still get to hear Ken here on Weekend Ag Matters. He doesn't want to call it a retirement. And with someone like Ken, you kind of have to expect the fact that he wants to take a step back and scale back on what he's doing. But he just can't let it go completely, and he's still going to contribute here on Weekend Ag Matters, and we're thankful for that as well. But again, like you said, we wish him all the luck and all the best as he moves forward in this next phase with what he plans. And moving on, a couple of things we're watching right now is trade. We did get the announcement from the president earlier this week that the Chinese Phase 1 trade deal will be signed January 15th in the White House. You know, they were hoping it was going to get done here during this week, but didn't quite happen that way. But we did get, again, January 15th is the day they're going to sign it, and then he immediately wants to start working on Phase 2. So that's some good news there.
Yeah, and Dustin, high-level representatives of China will be present at that signing ceremony again on January 15th. But U.S. Department of Agriculture Chief Economist Rob Johansson says the deal promises as much as $80 billion of purchases by China over the next years. $80 billion. So that's roughly $40 billion of U.S. agricultural purchases from China each year for the next couple of years. And putting this amount into perspective, China has purchased almost $25 billion of U.S. agricultural products from us in previous years. So they're committing that $25 billion plus an additional $15 billion in each of the next 2 years. So going to see increased agricultural purchases from China in the coming years here, which is great news. Other details of the agreement are yet to be seen, but U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer says those deals will be released after the deal is signed and official.
You know, and then I did hint to earlier as well, USMCA. That's the one that's got a lot of question marks. Not bad question marks, more of a matter of timing. We did see it get passed the House of Representatives right before Congress left for their holiday break. And the hope is that this will get marked up as early as Tuesday. And that's the hope right now. But there's a lot of things that are really depending on that right now. You're looking as far as Tuesday right now. That's what it would get marked up in the Senate Finance Committee. And we know that's chaired by Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley. And he has been an advocate for getting this trade deal pushed through and get it done for agriculture. And so he's really anticipating it to be able to get marked up and get moved through. But, of course, all this hinges on what they get sent from the House of Representatives. There is the Articles of Impeachment still hanging out there that Speaker Pelosi intends to hang on to for a little while, but no timetable on when she's going to send those to the Senate. Also, the USMCA has to be handed off to the Senate. If the USMCA comes first, I know Senator Grassley Grassley said that he was fairly certain that they could get it approved in one day's debate in the Senate floor. Of course, it has to get marked up in the Finance Committee and come out of his committee first. But if they can get that done, then that would be a big shot in the arm, because then it would go to the president's desk. And we know that USMCA would then be done and Canada would take their action on as well. However, the articles of impeachment get there first. Then the Senate basically shuts down everything until the impeachment trial is over with. So a lot of uncertainty there as we look forward into the next week. A lot of things to play wait and see on USMCA.
Yeah, and Dustin, my segment that's coming up here in just a moment is a recap of 2019 and some of the most memorable moments that I have as a farm broadcaster. But I quick want to note, make sure to watch out for that World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates report out next Monday.
All right, so we'll get to your recap of the 2019 and the year that was right now on Weekend Ag Matters.
In 2019, our broadcast team conducted hundreds of interviews. Our interviewees range from Iowa farmers to Washington officials. A lot of our colleagues have been sharing their favorite interviews from this past year, but I'm not going to lie, it's hard for me to pick a favorite, as each interview is unique and special in its own way. But I'll share a few that stuck out from the projects I spearheaded and shows I attended this past year. It was a pleasure to meet with Bob Herring, Mark Kenny, Steve Anderson, Tim Recker, Jim Rapoon, Sam Osi, Adam Nekonecki, and Tim Burrock throughout the 2019 crop season. They all welcomed me onto their farms, which then allowed me to gain a better understanding of cover crop production. They may disagree, but I would consider all of them to be cover crop experts. Now, that doesn't mean they aren't still trying new things when it comes to cover crops. I kept a record of all the interviews I conducted with these gentlemen over the past year, and you can review those materials online at iowaagnet.com. Once you're on the website, hover over the special coverage tab and then click Row Crop Run 2019. In February, I attended the Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show in New Orleans. This was the first big show of my broadcast career. It was an exciting opportunity, which prepared me for other shows of similar size, i.e. the Alltech Conference, which we'll talk about a little later on in this segment, and Commodity Classic, which I will be attending for the first time next month. A lot of ground was covered at the Cattle Industry Convention and Trade Show. However, two gentlemen truly made this an unforgettable experience. Shane Bedwell, Chief Operating Officer and Director of Breed Improvement at the American Hereford Association, and Scott Holt, North American Marketing Manager for AllFlex. Honestly, I didn't think I'd get a chance to speak with Shane Bedwell. Almost every cattle producer at the convention wanted to catch up or shoot the bull with him. Eventually, Bedwell gave me 10 minutes of his time for an interview, and the interview was filled with great content. But that's not what I enjoyed most about this interview subject. The most memorable part of this interview was Bedwell's kindness. He apologized for the wait, which he most certainly did not need to do. Waiting on sources is part of my trade, and he also made sure I had all the content I needed. Bedwell went out of his way for me that day, and I am grateful for kind people like him. I know you, my interview source, do not always enjoy me approaching you unexpectedly for a few minutes of your time, but know I greatly appreciate your expertise and time. Next was Scott Holt, who introduced me to SenseHub Beef, which is an electronic tag sending health and reproductive data to a producer's computer and or smartphone. Holt knew this product like the back of his hand, which greatly benefited me. I was given a visual and verbal breakdown of the product. The in-depth explanation helped me understand the product his company was offering to cattle producers, and at the end of the day, helped my storytelling capabilities. Fast forward to May, where I attended the Alltech One conference in Lexington, Kentucky. I flew out a few days early to visit a couple tourist attractions, such as the Kentucky Horse Park and Churchill Downs. Afterwards, I headed to the Alltech One conference, where I met Dr. John DeYoung, president of Pipestone Nutrition, and Brian McCauley, senior vice president of sales for Alltech. The three of us headed to the nearest coffee shop to discuss preventing the spread of African swine fever, and I enjoyed meeting them in a place they felt most comfortable and their vast knowledge and innovation surrounding this intriguing topic. Now, I'm double dipping for this last one. I was first introduced to Matt Bennett, grain marketing consultant for Channel Seed, at the Farm Progress Show, but also had an opportunity to catch up with him at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention. So, funny story. I was raving to Dustin about this great interview I had captured at the Farm Progress Show, which, of course, was my interview with Bennett. Dustin stopped in his tracks and said, "Wait a minute, you talked to the grain marketing consultant for Channel Seed at the Bayer booth?" I said, "Yeah, that's who I'm talking to you about." Turns out, unbeknownst to me, Dustin had already interviewed him. We both enjoyed the insight he offered to us that we invited him to provide weekly commentary for our opening market report. You can catch him every Friday morning on your local Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network affiliate. Well, folks, that's a wrap of my 2019. I look forward to providing you with more great content in the new year, but stay tuned, because after this break, we'll have more news for you.
Welcome to January. We made it to 2020. While we don't know what the year will bring, we try to be prepared. The same is true when you're traveling in winter conditions. Always be aware of the forecast and driving conditions along the complete route you plan to take. Allow yourself extra time and drive according to conditions. Be prepared with a winter survival kit in your car. Be safe when you're driving this winter. If you're not comfortable, stay home or get a ride. And check road conditions across Iowa by calling 511 on your cell phone or downloading the Iowa 511 app. This message from the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters. Here's your host, Dustin Hoffman.
We're all familiar with African swine fever and the damage it's been doing to the pork industry, especially in China and parts of Europe. However, do you realize that ASF is also affecting the price you pay for your hamburger at the drive-thru here in America? Wait a minute, how does a swine disease affect beef in America? Let's find out as we talk with Don Close of Rabo AgriFinance. So tell us a little bit about what you're here to tell us and the message you're here to give the people here that we can take to our listeners back home.
The big centerpiece of the conversations today have been the impacts of ASF, what that means in both in China, but then how that shortfall of protein in China is causing a major change in trade flows of product globally that's affecting the quantity of lean manufacturing beef being imported into the States, what that does for patty manufacturers, QSR restaurant cost here, and the impact, underlying impact that's had on the improvement in beef cutout values that we've had over the last 6 to 8 weeks. So the impacts of the activities going on in China is starting to have an impact on our market here at home.
You know, we wouldn't think that when we talk about ASF that we would think we'd be talking about beef, but it's definitely a chain reaction there.
Absolutely a chain reaction. You know, if you take the estimates that the bank has, we're estimating that 55% of China's breeding herd has been lost to date. There's certainly estimates that are much more aggressive than ours. But with that foundation, we're looking for an additional loss of the breeding herd of 10 to 15% in 2020. So while the disease is slowing down, it's far from being resolved.
Yeah, it's definitely something we heard when we talked with the pork producers last week. You know, they talked about that you're looking at maybe even a five-year plan before them to get back on their feet to where they were, and they're already planning on going beyond that because they have the opportunity now to rebuild.
Our estimate is, I think 5 years is absolutely the most optimistic view. I think 10 years is probably very realistic. And to always use as a benchmark, it took Spain 30 years to get ASF eliminated. So we're in nothing of the scale of China. So I've heard the disease described as a once in a century or a once in a lifetime occurrence. I believe that's a fair assessment.
So now how has that, we've talked about that it's causing a chain reaction affecting beef here and our supplies here. Well, so tell us about how that is affecting us here in the United States with beef.
So the price spread today of imported manufacturing beef delivered to the East Coast is basically 37 cents a pound or $137 a hundredweight premium to U.S. domestic 90s. Just because of our fall culling of cows, we're seeing our peak domestic cow slaughter right now. cow slaughter will fall off through the rest of the year and through next spring. So as that shortage of manufacturing beef takes place in our market, it's going to ultimately force the QSR burger restaurants to change up the mix of value meals that are offered and or cause them to see a net price increase of menu prices at per burger. So it's on that quick serve restaurant side that we're really seeing the initial ramification.
You know, so those people that are hearing this that maybe aren't even involved in the ag industry but are wondering why are the prices going up here at the drive-thru, you know, this is what's going on, and this is where it's starting to affect you because, you know, as we keep preaching, what happens in agriculture will eventually affect you somewhere down the line in the consumer price.
Absolutely true. We're also, with that foundation laid, if you take certainly U.S. demand for beef through 2019 has been very, very good. That demand base, all signs are it continues today. If we see that demand base continue into 2020, and so it will have an impact on all beef prices as we go down the road.
So what is it going to take for things to kind of settle? Is it going to have to be as long as it takes China to get itself back on its feet after something like ASF?
I don't know that we're to a point yet that we really know how this settles. The first assessment that I would make on that is once things do settle in China, that their mix of protein choices will be much different than they were when they started. I think that their production of protein in China will be impacted for years to come. I think that opens the door for an ongoing escalation in the quantity of beef and proteins that China imports. And then go right back to what we've been talking, that changes up which countries are supplying that demand and changes the trade flows going forward.
Definitely has a domino effect that has reached beyond the borders of China, because when we sit and think about it, we talk about it, it's like, oh, it's a shame China's getting hit like that. Okay, this is a chance for us to up our exports there. But we don't think about the fact that this is going to have a domino effect that will affect all of us in the consumer market.
Well, I think that's true. The other thing that I'm a part of some discussions in industry, but we're seeing a change in what the United States is exporting. We're going to, over time, transition from a bulk grain exporter that we have always been to an exporter of more finished proteins into the global market. So where that becomes complicated is what does that mean for on the farm, and what that producer, what grains he's electing, how many acres of grain we're producing, where he goes with the merchandising of that grain, and we have more domestic protein and a bigger use of domestic feed needs, but less exports of grain.
So this is definitely going to be something that's going to have ripple effects for many years to come.
Many years to come. I think that's the real takeaway of not only the China situation that we've talked about, but as you see protein demand as income, global income levels are increasing, we got more and more people, both Asia, the Middle East, India, even Africa, approaching that middle income status. The first thing that consumers want to do when that level of income increases, they want to eat better, and they want to eat better with protein. So the global demand and global export trade of the future is going to be more volatile, but also much more dynamic than what we've seen in the past.
It's definitely something producers are going to want to keep an eye out for, to watch these trends and see where they're going to be able to take advantage of the situation.
It's a very exciting time in animal agriculture.
Well, Don, I thank you very much. Is there anything you'd like to add for our listeners in Iowa before we wrap up today?
I think we've pretty well covered it.
That's Don Close of Rabo AgriFinance here on Weekend Ag Matters. We'll be back right after the break.
Keeping up on the latest in ag is a challenge, to say the least, but there are experts nearby ready to help. You'll find them at your local FS, you can trust them to bring you customized agronomic, grain, and energy solutions born of the latest thinking. That's because FS specialists receive continuous training that keeps them current on the latest trends, practices, and technologies. So you'll get local expertise that's both exceptional and up-to-date. Visit fssystem.com to learn how FS is bringing you what's next.
Welcome back to Weekend Ag Matters, and now, here's Ken Root.
In my five decades of reporting on agriculture and rural America, I've seen farmers ride the escalator of optimism and then plunge into the abyss time after time. It is a herd mentality that apparently still exists, even though the herd is now much smaller. Every farm owner who makes the majority of his income from commodity sales could be seated in a college football stadium. That should be a source of strength, not weakness. But the incredible investment controlled by this group has not yet given any assurance that they can control their own destiny. Lenders, whose numbers may be larger than those of farmers, are still the most influential factor in dictating the actions and resulting mood of the industry. Creighton University shows the mood of those who loan to farmers to risk on crops and livestock each month. In its latest iteration, the highlights are that the overall index remains above growth neutral for the first time in 12 months. And there's good news on farmland prices if you own it. For the first time since 2013, farmland prices advanced above growth neutral. A downtrend in the ag economy overall has the average banker still saying that 2020 farm loan defaults will grow by approximately 4%, down from an anticipated gain of 4.4% recorded last December. One of nine bank CEOs expects 2020 farm loan defaults to expand by 10 to 20%. As a result of the weak farm income, almost two-thirds of bankers reported that their banks had increased loan collateral requirements. The conclusion to take away from this depends on your commodity, your credit status with your banker, and your optimism or pessimism about the year ahead. The classic extreme of the last 80 years was the uptrend in the 1970s when the Soviet Union made a large and unexpected purchase of corn and wheat from the United States and other exporting countries. Every action fueled a reaction, and prices zoomed up until mid-decade, when some farmers were already in trouble. The reaction against tumbling prices was the American agriculture movement and its tractorcade to Washington, D.C. Many farmers did well until 1979, but then saw a change in government policy, which spiked interest rates and took away asset inflation that many farmers had been living on for the past 5 years. Attitudes changed from exuberant to angry, and then to resignation. We drained billions of equity out of rural America and set up an out-migration, which has yet to reverse itself. Finally, in 1988, the values stabilized and the modern generation of farmers began to work their way back to profitability. Every uptrend and downtrend in agriculture brings out the best and worst in people. Many, who became overextended in the 1970s, put themselves out of business in the 1980s. Others determined they would not be the last generation of their family to farm, so they took outside jobs and made financial sacrifices to stay. The era took its toll both in economic and social terms. Be it bad or good, most farmers of consequence today have never been through such a period. What the current generation has done since the uptrend ended in 2015 will challenge their character and their holdings. The issue of supply and demand always comes to the forefront. Farmers, given the chance to make a profit, will produce as much of a commodity as possible. The ability to expand production is one of the greatest strengths of Western civilization, but also the key factor in decline of farm income when supply exceeds demand and prices tumble. Mother Nature usually gets farmers out of their oversupply crisis, but normal weather will eventually allow the next cycle of overproduction. This is where some common sense reasoning should rise to meet reality. What if farmers were to plant seed that is less productive than the elite hybrids and improve varieties of today. Seed companies might actually benefit from a reduction in production in the long run. At this point, however, there is no long run on any product as quarterly earnings rule investment decisions. But the concept of growing a proven number or a faithful variety of the last decade still intrigues me. A grower could put the same amount of effort into the job and use the same equipment to plant and harvest, but the outcome would be about 10% less in a normal year. The result would be a reduction in carryover and higher prices on the short term. Is that price fixing? Is that collusion to alter the outcome? Does anyone really get hurt from a rollback of technology advancement at a time of oversupply and equity loss? The ability to ramp up production in the following season would still be in the bag when the market signals and the banker nods. Sink or swim, it's your choice. I'm Ken Root on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network.
Thank you, Ken, and that's all for this edition of Weekend Ag Matters. We thank you for tuning in with us here on the Iowa Agribusiness Radio Network. You can find replays of this show as well as all of our other content online at iowaagnet.com. Don't forget to find us on Twitter and Facebook at Iowa Ag Radio. On behalf of myself, Anna Hastert, and Ken Root, we thank you for joining us, and we'll see you again next week on Weekend Ag Matters.